I'm Karen.
I'm Greg.
I'm Aubrey.
And I'm Paul.
And this is Library Beat,
a weekly podcast about all things library.
This week, Karen and I sit down with Library Beat's film correspondent, Chris Hall, to discuss the scariest movies of all time. Stay tuned.
We have a special guest star this morning, don't we?
Yes, we do. We have Chris, who works our front desk here at the library, who is a movie aficionado.
He certainly is. We've had him as a guest on the show before, and he gave us some great recommendations of foreign films and more kind of cult classic type deals.
Yeah, he got off the mainstream.
Off the mainstream. Today, because at the end of the month, it's two very important things. It's Halloween.
And your birthday.
And it's my birthday. So, boo.
Were you born on Halloween?
I was born on Halloween.
Yes. I think someone else was too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But this is the spooky season where we get to think about creepy things and talk about our favorite scary movies.
Yes.
And Chris especially knows his scary movies. I would say you are a horror buff. Would that be accurate?
I think that's fair. I like all genres. I'm not discriminating.
Right.
But horror is a fun genre because there's just so much variety in it.
There certainly is.
Yeah. It can be trashy. It can be classy. It can be the lowest of lowbrow, highest of highbrow. It's very interesting that way.
It is very interesting. Are there particular things you look for in a horror film?
Well, I don't scare very easily. So I don't have that reaction to them as much.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting when you're sitting with somebody and watching a movie and they are the type of person who does get freaked out by stuff or does get disturbed by images or does, you know, cover their eyes or brace or shrink back. I never have done that. I mean, when I was a kid, maybe a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There were certain movies. I mean, I was deathly afraid of Chucky.
Well, Chucky's scary.
But I watched it very young. I used to watch, you know, there were no limits on what I could watch, really. My mom didn't really, it was kind of, what do you call it?
Free for all.
What's the opposite of helicopter parenting, you know? Like
free range, loosey-goosey.
Like, you know, the old school, like, yeah, you go outside, play,
Don't
bother me. Watch what you want to watch. And she kind of didn't really put very many restrictions on what I was allowed to watch. So I watched horror movies because
you could.
It's like Disney and horror movies because those have the best covers on the VHSs.
Right. You know? Oh, we're going way back to VHS time.
That was what
you're dating yourself, Chris.
I'm old.
I do not like the new scary movies, the made within the last 20 years or so.
I'm not really a fan of
that stuff that's coming out of the walls.
There's been a couple that I've liked, but I kind of agree with you.
I think Scream is the only new movie I've seen. The original Scream.
That was about
15 years ago or so.
It's almost 30.
Oh. No.
Time.
Scream.
1996.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does the time go?
Where does the time go? I think that was the last one I've seen. Yeah.
And now there's like 20 of those. Yeah, I don't even know how many.
I saw the original and I was, okay, I don't like these.
I think there's seven or eight now.
Oh, wow. Right.
Well, they're making money on them.
Yeah, so. Right. Oh, there's new ones coming. I think there's a new one coming out in, you know, February or something.
Well, let's talk about some of your favorites. Do you have sort of a top 10 list or at least a handful of picks?
I'm sure I could probably narrow it down. Off the top of my head, just you know, my all-time favorite movie. And some people may not call it a horror movie, but the Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah.
I did see that one. That's
one of my all-time favorite. It may actually be my all-time favorite movie just because it's so well-written and so well-acted. I mean, it won the Big Five at the Oscars. It was the last film to do that. It did Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Actor, and Best Screenplay. The only other films that have done that are It Happened One Night with Clark Gable, and Claudette Colbert.
Colbert.
And then One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. Those are the only three films that have ever done that. But that's not the only reason it's prestigious because I watched it pretty young. Like I said, I was watching these movies from a pretty young age. I think I saw that one when I was like 12 or 13.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really maybe understand all the nuances of it, but it appealed to me and I thought it was really interesting. And I was so into it that I got online and found the script, the screenplay that you know, by Ted Talley, and I printed it off, and I kind of learned how to read and write screenplays just from reading that one.
Well, I know that you are a Thomas Harris fan.
I'm a big
fan. The author of the book, books,
the Hannibal Lecter books, and Silence of the Lambs is actually really, really faithful to the book. Mm-hmm. It's a very good adaptation. It changes very little. What it does change, it made better, in a way, which is very, very rare.
That is,
They kind of trimmed the fat off of it and just made it a really sleek, great film. It's just a really, really well-written film. So that's one of my all-time favorites.
Is that generally considered a horror film?
Like I said, some people would argue on that. It's more horrifying than
it is.
It's a psychological thriller.
It's a psychological thriller if we want to be technical and get, you know, pedantic about it. Right. But
it does have some shocks.
I mean,
Hannibal's scary.
He's scary. Buffalo Bill. I think he's scarier than Hannibal.
Yeah.
He's the one that's skinning women.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Pete, this is an R-rated park.
I remember seeing that in the theaters. It was pretty frightening.
Yeah, and terrified people. And I think it was one of the first films that entered the public consciousness about, like, serial killers and things like that. I mean, there had been things like Dressed to Kill and maybe some others.
Yeah.
You know, but Manhunter, they had done Manhunter in the 80s, which was it's a Hannibal book as well. It's based on Red Dragon, which is the first book. Silence of the Lambs is actually the second book in the series. And they did it in the 80s as Manhunter. But it was not very faithful to the book, and it also changed. You know, it didn't do very well financially, so, you know, I don't know if that one would really count. But there had been other films, but none of them had been as big or made as big of a splash. So psychological thriller, probably more accurate, but I still count it because I think it has more. I think
scary
it's
parts.
Scarier, you know,
it's
like
it's very creepy. So I would consider around Halloween time, that would be good viewing for sure.
Yeah.
So what's your next pick?
Off the top of my head, just going on instinct. I think I talked about The Night of the Hunter on the last podcast we did.
I did. But you're welcome to talk about it again.
And again, that one may be more thriller than horror.
Well, it has a really good villain.
It does. I love films with good villains. That's another thing about me. I'm a very villain-oriented person.
Maybe if any of our listeners have not seen Night of the Hunter, I think most people are familiar with Silence of the Lambs, but Night of the Hunter might be a little bit more obscure. Maybe describe it.
Well, that's a film with Robert Mitchum. It's also based on a novel. The novel is by Davis Grubb. Robert Mitchum's just a great actor for those of you who are, you know, under the age of, you know, 30 and don't know who he is.
Great actor.
Cape Fear. He was great in Cape Fear too.
Yes.
The original.
Mm-hmm. Gregory Peck was good in that movie too.
Oh yeah, he was.
I love that movie.
But Robert Mitchum plays this preacher who is a serial killer, basically. And we're on a serial killer kick, I guess, right now. But that's what he does. He finds, like, women that are widowed. He marries them. He kills them and he takes their money. And he's targeting this widow, and she has two children. And their father went to prison for robbing a bank, and he knows where the money... Well, the father told the children where the money is, so the preacher knows that the children know. So he's kind of menacing them and antagonizing them and trying to get the money. And it's a very, very taut and tense film.
Dark.
Very dark. Yeah, it's known for a particular sort of visual style.
It has a very, like, almost fairy tale kind of... Mm-hmm. What would you call it? Expressionistic, noir.
Yes.
It's black and white, so it plays with shadow very well. I think Stanley Cortez did the cinematography, and he had done Citizen Kane, so it's very...
So he knew what he was doing?
He knew what he was doing, yeah.
All right. Well, that's an excellent pick.
Candyman.
Ooh, the original Candyman.
The original one. Now, they made a recent one, and it was okay, but the original is just... it's a very gothic... It's very... Just the ideas in that film, the idea of, like... can a ghost exist just because you believe in it?
Mm-hmm.
Does giving it something belief give it power? That's an interesting idea, and it's popped up a lot in cultures, and that film plays with that idea, I think, to a really successful degree. And I think it's got a really... Oh, it's really good. It's got a very, very good score as well. With I think Philip Glass did the score. It's very operatic.
The thing I remember being freaked out by, and it turns out it was actually based on something that could actually happen, was the medicine cabinets in the bathroom that connected apartments. Yeah, and it was sort of based on Cabrini Green, right?
Yeah, so the movie is set, it was filmed in Cabrini Green, which was this Chicago-like apartment complex. Housing. It was the projects. It was public housing. And Chicago in the 90s, this is when the film was made in 92, was really, really bad. The gangs and the violence.
Very violent. Yeah.
Very violent. And in Cabrini Green, people had broken through the mirrors into the apartments because they were such, you know, the walls were so thin in between the apartments, and they didn't even cover it up when they put the mirrors in the bathroom. So people were getting through and murdering people.
Mm.
And so Candyman, the whole idea is, you know, it's a ghost, and he was lynched, you know. And so it plays with that. It plays with race. It plays with a lot of that. But you say his name in the mirror. People think three times. It's actually five times. You got to say his name five times. And then, you know, he comes and he gets you.
Yeah. I'm getting scared right now. And that was remade a few years ago. And the remake was supposed to be pretty good.
It was
too,
more of
right?
a, it was almost, it was a kind of quasi remake, quasi sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It takes elements from the first film and follows up on them.
Okay.
But it kind of does its own modern kind of thing with it. It was interesting. And I think it was worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
And the first film had other sequels too. There was like a sequel, Farewell to Flesh, which was okay. It wasn't a bad film. It kind of expanded on the Candyman's backstory, because, you know, like I said, it does play into why he is an urban legend and why he haunts people. And I just think it's really interesting, the idea of a ghost that's not even necessarily motivated by revenge. He's more motivated by the desire to be believed in as a figure of urban legend and lore.
Something Karen and I have talked about, maybe talked about the book a little bit, but is the whole Slender Man phenomenon.
Oh, yeah,
are you
yeah.
familiar with that?
I know it's an internet meme. I know that it's a figure, like an urban legend internet meme character. It's kind of similar to Candyman a little bit,
yeah,
but for the internet age.
That's what made me think of it. Yeah.
And these little girls I know had become so obsessed with it and ended up murdering a classmate. And
they didn't murder. She was stabbed several times. They didn't know she would live, but she did live.
Oh, she did live. Okay.
There's a new book out. I read it this year, and it's terrifying. Mm. I looked at my child's phone. What are you into?
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's dark. It's scary because
they believed it.
Did they believe? Like,
they believed it
was real.
Wholeheartedly, and they were, after they stabbed the child, they were walking to some woods
to try to find him.
Yeah, to live with him.
Yeah.
And totally convinced that he was real, and that is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
City Plumbing, Heating, and Electric offers free HVAC estimates and has discounts for seniors and veterans. Their vision is to provide prompt, reliable service that exceeds expectations. Their positive and cooperative attitude has made them a provider of choice in Garland County for over 30 years. Thanks, City Plumbing, Heating, and Electric, for your next project. Call 501-623-3325 or 501-922-3325.
And that's kind of, Candyman is a bit like that as well, where the plot of the film is this investigative, you know, she's a student. She's not quite a journalist yet, but she's studying journalism, I think. And she starts investigating the urban legend and then finds out, oh, maybe it's true.
Mm.
Or is she going crazy? It kind of plays on that Hitchcock of the woman who knows the truth, but nobody believes her.
Mm.
So, you know, it's a very good movie.
Okay.
It's just a good movie. Clive Barker wrote it's based on a short story by Clive Barker. And he did Hellraiser and all those things, which those are okay too. But Candyman's actually, the subject matter, it's scarier, but the subject matter elevates it. And Tony Todd plays Candyman in the film, and he gives just a really good performance. He has a really great deep voice, and you know, the whole idea is that he was stung to death by bees as well. So bees are all, like, coming out of his mouth. And, you know, it's very stunning imagery and disturbing imagery. But
do you like anything like The Ghost and Mr. Chicken? Anything like that? That is one of my
favorite. With Don Knotts.
I love that movie. And, I mean, that's about as scary as I want.
Right.
One of the, while you're talking about one of these movies, somehow Arsenic and Old Lace popped into my brain. I think when you're talking about Night of the Hunter, and this is another sort of...
That one's Cary Grant.
Yeah. Cary Grant. And it's a comedy, but it has some of these
dark,
creepy elements to it. There's nothing really horrifying about it. But if you need sort of an antidote to these,
yes, these
super...
really dark, heavy movies.
Yes.
What's another one you like on your top 10 list?
It all starts really with modern, like, horror in film, really. Not even modern, just horror as a film genre. It really goes back to Nosferatu. That was the first, probably one of the earliest horror films, what we would consider horror films, 1922. So it's over 100 years old at this point. And it's an adaptation of Dracula. But then Universal Pictures in the early 30s started doing their own adaptations of classic gothic horror novels. Like they did Dracula in 1931 with Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff's Frankenstein. I'm a really big fan of the Universal monster movies. So Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy.
The Wolfman.
The Wolfman, The Invisible Man.
I love the Claude Rains.
Bride of Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I love that movie.
All of those. Those are actually some of my favorites of all time. My favorite, if I had to pick, it would probably be Bride of Frankenstein, just as a film. Invisible Man would probably be up there.
That's
as well,
a great
with Claude Rains.
Yes.
And I collect the monsters too. I really like the monster movies. And there's actually a company called NECA that's been making action figures for all these monster movies. And yeah, I just love them. I love the designs. The thing they had, nearly all of them had in common, was they were, you know, produced by, I think it was Carl Laemmle, right? He was the founder of Universal Studios. And they had had success with Lon Chaney, mm-hmm, with like Phantom of the Opera and Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yes.
And there are several of his films that are just lost to time, like London After Midnight, things like that. We have stills and images and we know what they look like, but he was a really innovative figure in horror that maybe a lot of kids don't understand the importance of. And then his son was, of course, Lon Chaney Jr. and did The Wolfman. I mean, at one point he played every monster. I mean, he was Dracula in one of the films. He was Frankenstein in one of the films. Like, he played the mummy in one of the films. So I think he played everything except the Creature from the Black Lagoon at one, and maybe the Bride too. But I love those films. So they're up there for me.
Do you think that Bela Lugosi is the definitive Dracula?
I mean, it's not the best Dracula film. He's the definitive Dracula. It's not a good adaptation of the book because it's more based on the stage play. It's very stagey.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you can tell they're on sound stages. You can tell that people are just waiting to walk in, you know, to frame, because the 30s wasn't very technical yet with how they could move cameras because of the, and we talked about this, I think, on the mm-hmm last podcast, how the cameras were so heavy because of the sound equipment was in the camera. They didn't have boom mics and things like that, so they couldn't move the camera, swivel the camera like they could in silent films or like they could later in the 40s and 50s. So you have a lot of static shots in those movies of just where it's like filming a play, because that's basically what they were doing. They were on big sound stages. It might as well have been a stage, and the action is very limited. And so some people can probably find it really boring. But there's something about Bela Lugosi that you just look at him and you're like, oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he doesn't match the description of Count Dracula in the book. And you know, in the book, Dracula is described as having like long gray hair and a long gray mustache and hairy palms and things like that. He doesn't match that at all, but you look at him and you go, I don't care, that's Dracula. That's, you know, that's what he looks like.
I think that's my first horror film memory, was being really entranced by Dracula. And I just sort of loved to be scared, and Dracula scared me very well.
I remember as a kid, I wanted to look like Bela Lugosi, like the widow's peak hair,
mm-hmm,
and I wanted to brush my hair like that.
Yeah.
It's
a good look. it's not too late, Chris.
I know. But Dwight Frye is actually my favorite, I think, in that film.
Who does he play?
He played Renfield.
Okay.
If you go back and watch. And Dwight Frye is like really, really underrated. He's in nearly all the Universal Monster movies. He was in Dracula. He was Renfield. That's probably his most iconic performance. But he was in Frankenstein. He was the hunchback assistant, the lab assistant, Fritz. People think he was Igor, but Igor came later. Igor was in Son of Frankenstein, and that was Bela Lugosi playing that part. So he was the original. He was Fritz, and then he's in The Invisible Man. He's a reporter in that one. He's in The Wolf. I think he's in Bride of Frankenstein, excuse me. he's like one of the murderers in Bride of Frankenstein that, I don't know if you remember, Dr. Pretorius, he's the rival scientist to Frankenstein. He hires a guy to go out and get some body parts.
And I don't remember, but it's making me want to watch it.
It's
again.
Dwight Frye is the person he hires. He's like, yes, and he goes out. And, you know, you see him like strangle a woman and then come back, and he's like, I got it.
How do you feel about Young Frankenstein?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people love that one, and I understand. I just it doesn't click with me. I don't know. I know it uses a lot of the same sets and props from the original Universal Frankenstein movies. I love Mel Brooks. And there are parts of that film that I really like, but this is going to be a heresy.
Oh, my goodness.
I like Dracula Dead and Loving It more than I like Young Frankenstein.
I have not seen Dracula Dead. Is that a Mel Brooks movie?
It's Mel Brooks, too, yeah. Okay. That's the one where Leslie Nielsen plays Dracula.
Okay. Well, Leslie Nielsen is always funny. I haven't seen Young Frankenstein in years. I remember thinking it was very funny when I first discovered it, mm-hmm. but that was a long time ago.
This came out in 1974, right? Mm-hmm.
I saw it at the theater.
Now you're dating yourself.
I know, I am.
But you were young.
I was young.
Yeah.
We've probably got time for a couple more picks. Do you have some more good ones?
I like pretty much everything in horror. You know, Godzilla movies, if you count those. I mean, the monster movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love Godzilla versus Hedorah, which was the one with the smog monster. I like the slasher films. I like Jason. I like Freddy. I like Michael. The original Halloween is a great film. I like some of the, you know, I like a lot of the sequels. There are actually very few that I really don't like. But Halloween, the original with John Carpenter, amazing, is just an amazing film. And people forget that because of all the trashy sequels mm-hmm. that came out after it. But the original is actually really, really well made. And even some of those trashy sequels, like I said, I like a lot of them. The Thing, another John Carpenter film, great, great film, great special effects, jump scares, paranoia. It's really relevant right now in a lot of ways to the whole, like, oh my, who can I trust? Who can I not trust? I don't like this person. You know, they're up to something. You know, there's a lot of hysteria and paranoia going on right now, and I feel like when John Carpenter made that was at the height of the Cold War, and so there was a lot of that going around. And it plays into body horror and body scares. And I think people have drawn parallels between how, like, the AIDS epidemic had just started and John Carpenter was kind of maybe tapping into some of that with the whole fear of the unknown and fear of, you know, your body betraying you and turning into this, you know, goop and stuff. You know?
Ooh, goop.
Have you ever seen
I haven't seen it.
The
no.
Thing? Really?
No.
Y'all should check out
All
that,
right.
that one.
Karen,
it might be a little too much.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
Was that a remake?
No. The original was. It was the remake of The Thing from Another World, which was, I think, in 1951, 52, somewhere around there. It was Howard Hughes, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
Or Howard Hawks.
Oh.
I'm doing this off the top of my head, so
some
if I'm wrong.
Howard.
There's
some
a Howard.
There's a Howard.
And that was the film that John Carpenter remade. And when it first came out, his film was not very well regarded. It got terrible reviews. It did terribly at the box office. And it was only like years later that people were like, this is actually a really, really good film. Kurt Russell's in it. Wilford Brimley is in it.
Oh,
and Wilford Brimley is so good in The Thing.
Yes. When I eat oats, I think of him.
Oh. Well, we've talked about some of the best. What's the worst?
I just mentioned Halloween.
The first one was really good. I've actually seen that one.
I love the first movie. The second one I like. I love the fourth one. I think the fourth one is very underrated. The third one we don't really talk about because it's not Michael Myers. It's its own weird thing. That was the one where they were like, they had finished Halloween 2 and they were like, okay, we did it. It's done. And then they tried to go in a different direction with it. And so the third film is this weird story about these cult members who worship Stonehenge and they're trying to like blow up kids' heads with a laser with like Halloween mask. It's out there. It's wild. So the fourth movie, they were like, that didn't work. Let's bring Michael Myers back. And then they actually did a really good good job. And then the fifth one kind of was, and then the sixth one divides a lot of people. I'm in the category of I think it's a good movie. But the seventh one was the one that brought Jamie Lee Curtis back. The eighth one was a terrible film. Then they remade them with Rob Zombie.
How many have they done?
There's a lot.
They're like 13 or
more. There's like 12 or 13. Yeah, something like that. And then they did the two Rob Zombie films, and then they started it over again. They did a sequel to the original film, the John Carpenter film, and they brought Jamie Lee Curtis back again.
Oh, poor Jamie Lee. That's her career as Halloween.
And then they did a sequel and a sequel to the sequel, so they did a little trilogy there. And the first two I liked. You know, the first one I was like, well, it's not as good as the original, but they're doing something interesting with it. The second one I was like, well, they're actually getting really brutal with it. And it was just like, this is just Michael Myers is on a, he's like a shark. He's just going forward. He's just destroying everything in his path. I'm like, this is great. I love it. The third film, Halloween Ends, I despised.
Oh, no.
I despised. And I don't use that word very often. When I don't like things, I generally just don't bother with it. I don't. Mm-hmm. If you like it, more power to you. If you, but that film offended me. And oh, I don't. And again, I'm not a person who gets offended. It was just a disgusting movie. It was just disgusting. It had a very mean-spiritedness to it. It completely destroyed everything that had made the franchise interesting. I loathed it. And the entire time, there was an instinct in me to like, I want to turn this off. But at the same time, I want to watch it and see if they dare to go in the direction I think they're going to go in. And they dared.
They dared.
And, oh, my God. We had talked about going to see it at the theater, and it would have been like, you know, $40-something dollars after two tickets and the online service fees and all that. Yeah. But we ended up watching it on Peacock because they were like, oh, we're going to put it on Peacock the same day it went to theaters. And so we didn't have to pay to go to the theaters to see it. And if we had paid, I would have demanded my money back.
Wow.
That's how upset and outraged I was at that movie. And I don't get that way very often.
That must have been pretty bad.
It's a terrible, terrible film. So that might be my pick for the worst of all time, because I just had such a miserable experience.
I will not see that.
You should watch it just to see how bad it is.
There are some bad movies that I'm curious about. Like, I think I watched like the first 5 minutes of Cats, and I realized it's just as bad as everybody says it is.
There's a horror film for you.
Yeah, definitely. We haven't mentioned a couple of my favorites, and I'm not a huge horror fan. I've enjoyed your picks for sure, and I'll definitely watch some of those. Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist.
I love both of those movies. I love Ruth Gordon in Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah. She's something else.
I liked the original Amityville Horror. Mm-hmm. That scared the...
With the flies on the...
You know, and James Brolin running that axe or whatever he had.
James Brolin, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Margot Kidder. Yeah.
Oh,
crazy Margot Kidder.
Lois Lane. Exorcist is a great film.
Margot Kidder was in another really creepy movie, the Brian De Palma, the one about the twins.
Dead Ringers?
No, is it just called Sisters?
Sisters. Dead Ringers was Cronenberg.
That's a very creepy movie.
Dead Ringers was Cronenberg. That's the one with Jeremy Irons, but it's good too if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Another horror film. Phantom of the Paradise is one I want to mention too. It's more of like a B movie, you know, music, like rock and roll musical. We could talk about Rocky Horror too, because that's kind of fits the bill as well.
Yeah.
But Phantom of the Paradise, everybody knows Rocky Horror. Nobody knows Phantom of the Paradise. So I want to mention Phantom of the Paradise because it's good. Paul Williams, Brian De Palma did Phantom of the Paradise, and Paul Williams did the music. Paul Williams, who did all the Muppet movies and all the soundtracks, he's the villain in Phantom of the Paradise, and he also did all the songs. It's very campy. It's very fun. It's very over the top. I'm surprised it doesn't have more of a cult following. And it does have a cult following, but more in Canada, I think. Hmm. Winnipeg, for some reason, has a real attachment to that movie. But if you've never seen Phantom of the Paradise, it's a lot of fun. If you like things like Rocky Horror, just outrageousness, Repo, The Genetic Opera, things like that, you'll probably love Phantom of the Paradise.
Well, Chris, I feel like we have barely scratched the surface of your knowledge of horror films.
I didn't even get to talk about Chucky.
I feel like we're about out of time, so we will have to talk again.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we didn't even talk about horror books or anything.
Oh, we didn't. We talked about a little bit of Thomas Harris. If you love Silence of the Lambs, read the book. Read Red Dragon. Red Dragon's even better.
Yes.
And Hannibal, the book. I've been watching Hannibal, the TV series, again. So I'm just, I love that series. So read the books. They're all great.
All right. Well, let's wish everyone a creepy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Thank you, Chris, for talking to
us.
Thank
you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Library Beat from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. Join us each Friday for a new topic.